call the meeting to order. We do not have a quorum. However, we will get that later on, and we want to finish up on the information on resources for K-12 education. I'd just like to call your attention to, in the packet, you had a brochure on higher education. If you look here at the front, disregard that, because we'll not be talking about that particular issue. The same thing is true if you take a look at the presentation that was made previously and we'll end on today, and that is this piece, okay, and eliminate higher education, okay? So just so that you know what we're going to be doing, and then we'll get started in regard to that. Pardon me?
Woodward, that just eliminate higher ed.
It's eliminate. Okay.
Well, that isn't on the agenda.
No. But I just don't want people to be confused as to what the information is. That's all. Okay? So, as soon as we have a quorum, we will stop and get things straightened away, because we don't have enough people at the present time. So I would like to call up Greg Crow, who is going to continue. And Greg, would you kind of refurbish us as to where in the presentation we were beginning, okay? Would you do that, please, and then begin?
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Greg Crow from the Fiscal Analysis Department. We were on that packet with the pie chart at the beginning. We just finished page 21, kind of giving a little bit of an overview of the state budget and the context that education, K-12 and early childhood is in that budget. So if you go to page 22...
Now, just hold on a minute. I think we've got the wrong one. We're... Okay.
On page 22, there should be something that says...
Yeah, we've only got 11 pages here, so this is apparently not the one that we're to be using, so...
Mr. Chair, I can use the overhead camera for now if you want me to go ahead and do that.
I think that's a good idea. Does anyone have an objection to that? Okay. Why don't we do that? And so I'd like to finish this up this morning as soon as we can. So we'll use the cameras for the information. Okay, Mr. Rowe, do you want to... begin your presentation.
And members, we've got a chart here. Basically, what this graph shows is school district revenue on a per student basis between 1984 and 2005. We're going to make some changes to this chart in the subsequent charts. But basically, what this shows is that over a 20-year period, on a raw dollar amount, that's the solid line, you can see education revenue for school districts on a per student basis has increased from a little under $4,000 to a little under $11,000. And there's a line below that that's a little harder to see, but it's a dashed line. And what that dashed line represents is total revenue per student adjusted for inflation. And as you can see, when you adjust for inflation, the increase is obviously not as great. So you can see that line stays between $4,000 and $6,000 per student for that entire 20-year period. The next chart pulls out of those revenues per student building debt and special ed revenues. And the reason for this is basically to give you an idea of what school districts are operating with. In other words, building debt fluctuates because of building projects that school districts have, and doesn't really relate to the amount of money that they have to operate. And similarly, special ed expenses are pulled out because the goal is to kind of show what the operating expenditures the district has, the discretionary funding a district has, and special ed expenditures are dictated by law rather than some of the other choices districts might have about their revenue. So again, the top line that you see, and this is all non-adjusted for inflation. So the top line that you see, the solid line, is total revenue per student. Then the dashed line that's a bit below that is total revenue less building debt per student. So if you take the building out, you can see that the increase is only up to about $8,500 per student by 2003. And then the bottom line, the solid line with the diamonds in it, is total revenue less debt and special education revenue per student. So since 1984, that number was about $3,500, and by 2003, the number was about $7,000 or $7,500. Now, what happens when you adjust that for inflation? That's the next chart. And when you can see what happens is adjusting for inflation really flattens those lines out. The top line again is inflation adjusted total revenue per student, which you can see goes from a little under $4,000 to a little less than $6,000. But then when you pull out the building debt, the increase actually only goes up to about a little under $5,000 per pupil from $4,000 over 20 years. And then if you pull out both building debt and special education, over 20 years, the funding has basically been flat, going from the low 3,000s to about 4,000. Averaging maybe 1% per year.
Mr. Crow, would you just hold on for just a minute? We do have a quorum. I'd like to call the meeting to order, and we need approval of the minutes for the previous meeting. Representative,
Mr. Chair, I'll move the minutes.
Minutes have been moved. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion carries. Would you continue with your presentation?
Mr. Chair, yes, and members. The next pie chart is one that just shows district operating expenditures per student for fiscal 2003. People often wonder what on average districts are spending their money on, and this chart basically breaks it out. We have some categories that are defined based on the accounting system that school districts use. There's a uniform accounting system that school districts use to report their expenditures to the state. Some things of note, regular instruction is at about 50% of school districts' expenditures. Other types of instruction, special education, is about 16%. And vocational instruction, there it is about 2%. So just on the raw instruction categories, it's a little over 65%. People often ask the question how much is spent on administration in school districts. On a statewide average basis, the pie at the top, the pie slice, shows about 5% of total expenditures in school districts are for administrative costs, and an additional 3% for district support services, which fall into that administrative kind of category, or you know, broad district support rather than classroom support.
Mr. Grohl, just as a case in point, refresh my memory here, and that you said that the total amount of expenditures for an average school district is 5% for administrative costs. Am I correct on that?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay, and does that cover just salary, or does that cover salary or other things that may be in addition to salary?
Yes, Mr. Chair, it goes beyond salary. It includes everything that can be assigned to the administrative functions of the district.
Okay. Thank you very much. Continue.
Mr. Chair and members, the next chart I wanted to show you was, these last few charts are pretty program specific, so I'll go through them fairly quickly, but I thought you might be interested in seeing them. This first is special education funding. The gray bar at the bottom is a regular special education program. The spots with the lines in it, that special education levy, when we had a levy in 1998 and 99 for special education, and then the dark part of the bar at the top is special education excess cost revenue. You can see that funding rose pretty rapidly in the late 90s and into 2003, and now it's tapered off and declining. Our special education funding, we don't fully fund special education. The way it's calculated is basically we set a statewide cap, and then that cap is adjusted for pupil growth. And so since the number of pupils is falling, the amount of special education funding is also declining, because that cap amount goes down as the pupil count goes down. That's not to say that special education expenses on the part of school districts are declining, because they're not. They're rising. It's just the portion that's paid out of state aid dedicated for special education funding is staying flat. And this isn't too useful up on the charts. It's a if you had your packet from last time, or if you still have it, there's a chart in here that I can reproduce for you if you're interested, that shows how much federal money is available for special education. Most of you are sure, I'm sure, are aware of the 40% commitment that was made by the federal government to fund special education. Right now, the federal funds related to that 40% full funding level are actually at about 17% for Minnesota. Page 28 has got a chart that just shows school district debt service. This is basically the kind of the mortgage payments that districts have each year to service their debt for bonds they've sold for school construction and renovation projects. You can see that since 1997, the total amount of debt service has more than doubled. And the mix in there, the light gray, is the levy amount that districts levy for those payments. The dark is the state aid share of that, debt service equalization aid. We have an equalized aid and levy for debt service payments, but it's a pretty small amount of equalization aid. And you see that on the next chart. This kind of shows what the state participation in the debt service program has been over time. Back in 97, state aid accounted for 10% of all debt service paid by school districts. By 2009, we're projecting that to be under 3%. What's happening is that property tax value is growing quickly, and the equalizing factors for the debt service levy are fixed. So as property tax value grows, the state's share gets smaller and smaller. You see a small bump in 2003-2004. We adjusted the equalizing factors and added a second tier of debt service equalization aid for districts that have high debt and low property values. And so you can see that by 2005, the trend is of reduced state participation had pretty much gone back to where it was prior to those changes. The next chart, the chart I'll end on is this one. It's basically shows the amount of operating referendum revenue. So the last two charts dealt with debt revenue. This chart deals with operating referendum revenue. This is the total dollar amount per pupil statewide in excess levy operating referendums passed in school districts across the state. The slightly less dark shade in the bottom part is the amount of levy, and then on top of that is the amount of aid. similar to debt service equalization aid. We have equalization and operating referendums. The large drop you see in 2004 is the when district referendum amounts were reduced by the state in conjunction with the by $415 in conjunction with a $415 increase in the basic formula amount. You can see, however, that the short-term reduction in operating referendums basically has been eliminated. The trend is sharply upward up until 2003 and 2004, but by 2006 we've gotten back to where we were prior to the $415 reduction in referendums that occurred during the 2001 legislative session. I've got another table we talked about a bit. Basically, it just shows the broad range of operating expenditures per pupil, tax capacity per pupil, and size of school districts. Just wanted to include it in your packet to give you a sense of what you all are dealing with when you have education funding issues in front of you, given the lack of kind of having an average school district. That's why our funding formulas look the way that they do. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have at this time.
Okay. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, can you just go back a couple to that one? We had the two shades of darkness where you had the dip.
With the operating
last one right there, yeah, the operating referendum. That does not include the governor's proposal of everyone having an increase of in property tax without a referendum. This is just referendums, correct?
Mr.
Representative Solberg, that's correct. This chart only shows voter-approved operating referendums, and it does not include the governor's projected increase to operating referendums with the increase. Part of his additional property tax projection is an increase in operating referendum cap, which would allow some districts to go out and levy for additional money because they're capped right now. None of these charts include anything related to the governor's proposal, but I can answer all questions you have.
Mr. Chairman, am I correct then that the governor has two proposals for increasing property tax? One of them is increase the cap, and then the other one is just a statewide increase in property tax for schools. Is that correct?
Representative Mr. Groh?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, there's actually more than two. Those are two of the largest. There's also, for example, a deferred maintenance levy that the governor proposes, allowing districts who don't qualify for the alternative facilities program to go and do deferred maintenance that they're not able to do under the current health and safety program. The total for the operating cap increase is about $42 million, and the total for the discretionary levy is about $56 million. So that's $98 million. There's an additional $43 million of other levies, including that deferred maintenance levy.
Okay,
Representative Solberg?
Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other questions, members? Well, thank you, Mr. Grohl, for your testimony. Next we have on the agenda has to do with tax aids and credits overview. And Ms. Marie Zimmerman, would you kindly state your name for the record and then begin your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Marie Zimmerman. I am one of two of the fiscal staff on the tax committee, and my area is mostly dealing with the property tax aids and credits budget, which is what I'm going to be going over today. If you flip to slide two, I'm sure you've seen this pie chart a couple of times, but it's just basically to show you how much property tax aids and credits is of general fund spending. It's 9.8% of general fund spending. And the only other thing I wanted to point out in this chart is that all of the property tax saving credits is general fund money. We don't appropriate out of any other special revenue funds. So if you go to slide three...
Chair, would you repeat that first? You said 98%. What was that?
It's 9.8% of general fund spending is property tax saving credits.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair. Okay, so slide three is just kind of a brief look at the aging credits budget. You can see the total amount of our budget in the far bottom left corner is $2.96 billion for the 06-07 biennium. The major programs in the budget are local government aid, which is paid to cities, and that's just about 30% of our budget at $873 million. County program aid is paid to counties and is approximately 14% of the budget at $412 million for the biennium. And if you move down both of the homestead and agricultural market value credits together, those two programs make up about 22% of the budget, and the homeowner and renter property tax refunds also make up about 22% of the budget. So these seven major programs that are listed here make up just about 90% of the budget, and there are some also smaller aid and credit programs in our budget, including border city disparity credit, aid to police and fire, senior property tax referral, and a bunch of other smaller ones that we have. So if you go to the next slide, this is basically just to show you what type of appropriations our programs are in the budget. As you can see,
Ms. Zimmerman, just hold up. Representative Clark, you have a question.
Thank you. Zimmerman, you didn't mention the tax-free zones, and I wonder what they account for.
Oh, Ms. Zimmerman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, the tax-free zones are exemptions from state property tax, state property taxes, so income tax, corporate tax. This is just the spending that we do in the aid and credits area. So there is a property tax exemption in the job zones. So what that would do is that would just simply increase the property tax refunds for homeowners. So that's how it would affect this budget that we're looking at here.
Representative Clark?
Thank you. Do we have the actual percentage increase?
Ms. Zimmerman?
Mr. Chair,
you said it would increase the cost to homeowners. Do you have that? Is that coming up here and something you're talking about?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, no. The only thing in the aids and credits budget that relates to Job Z is there is a Job Z aid that can go to cities where if a certain percent of their tax base is in a Job Z zone, then we give aid to that city, but we don't have any aid being paid out in that because there's not enough cities that have enough of their tax base in Job Z aid. That's the only program in our budget that relates to Job Z.
Representative Clark?
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, continue on then, Ms. Zimmerman.
Okay, so slide four is just to show the appropriation by type. All of the aids and credits appropriations are statutory. About 40% of the appropriation amounts are set in statute, and that's LGA and county program aid. And those two appropriations make up that whole 43%. And those two appropriations actually used to be open appropriations before we made changes in 2003, but now they're both set dollar amounts in statute. The other 60% are open statutory appropriations, or also referred to as open and standing. And the largest payments in this open category are property tax refunds and the market value credit payments. And this is just kind of to show the difference from other spending areas that have direct appropriations and require legislation every time we set the budget, and that's not necessary for any of the base budget for the property tax aids and credits budget. So if you move to the next slide, this graph just shows property tax aids and credits expenditures since fiscal 02. The reason why I picked fiscal 02 as kind of the starting point is because this represents the property tax aids and credits budget before the changes in the 2001 reform. So fiscal 2003 is the first year of the reform, and you can see it goes down a little bit, and this is mostly due to the elimination of all non-county HACA and the elimination of the education, homestead, and aid credits, and then savings and other smaller aids and credits programs because of changes that we made to class rates and so on. In fiscal 04 and 05, we had major reductions to local government aid and county aid, so you can see that goes down again. We made a cut of about $540 million for the 04-05 biennium, which was about a 16% reduction from the base. And then you can see from going from fiscal 05 to fiscal 06, there is a slight increase, and that's mostly county aid receiving an increase between those 2 years. So if you go to the next slide, slide six, this slide is similar to the last slide, except for it just breaks it down by program category. So the first dashed line is the total budget, and the second line is major aids and credits, which includes LGA, county program aid, and the market value credit. And as you can see, as I mentioned earlier, in 04 and 05, we made fairly significant reductions, so that line goes down. But the third line is the homeowner and renter property tax refund programs, and that actually has had somewhat of a fairly significant increase, and that's mostly, and especially in fiscal 03 and 04, and that's mostly due to the expansion that we made in the homeowner property tax refund program in 2001. And then the fourth line is just the smaller aids and credit programs that we have, and that has remained fairly constant to flat. So if you go to the next slide, this kind of shows where the money goes.
Representative,
can I just back up a little bit, because I'm not much of a tax person. On your refunds program, the one that has shown some growth, is that a program where if your property tax goes up over, let's say, 12%, you get that refund? Is that the type of program that you've seen growth in?
Ms. Zimmerman?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, the one that you're thinking of, I think, is the targeting, or also called the special property tax refund, which says that if you have over a 12% increase, the state pays, or it has to be a minimum of $100 the increase, it pays 60% of that increase, yes. But the regular homeowner property tax refund is just what your property taxes are relative to your income based on some income thresholds and co-pays in that schedule as well. So it's both.
Representative, so that Robert? Maintains what we call the circuit breaker, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Okay. Ms. Zimmerman, this is just a question on the convolutedness of the property tax aids and credits and so on. Just as a case in point, we see that there's a large variety of aids and so on. And if you were to propose a solution to the problem to eliminate all of that convoluted, literally very little understanding by the average citizens in the state of Minnesota, and I'm not saying that exists, but sometimes I have a difficult time and I have to have an accountant come in and do my taxes and so on. So I'm just wondering, does the Department of Taxes, do they have a possible simpler method of taxation, and what would drive that, or is this the best kind of a system that we have now? I'd like your opinion in regard to that as best you can.
Mr. Chair,
Representative,
I think that's a question that should be directed to us instead of a staff person's opinion from the Department of Revenue. I don't know if, she can try to answer it, but I would think that'd be better directed to us or the Department of Revenue.
If you would care not to answer that question, I would recognize that.
Mr. Chair, I wouldn't be able to give you a simple answer to that question, so okay. I don't think it's anything that I want to attempt. And
sure.
I'm not by any means of all the tax staff the property tax expert on the committee either. My main focus as the fiscal analyst is the aids and credits budget, and they're not mutually exclusive, but my overview today was mainly just to cover the budget, so, and I don't think I'd like to attempt to answer the question.
All right, why don't you continue?
Thank you. I think we are on slide 7, should be property tax aids and credits by recipient. And this kind of just shows where the money goes on a biennial basis. So we have about $711 million, which is about 25% of the budget. Our payments to individuals for the property tax refunds for homeowners and renters, but also includes other refunds like the political contribution refund, which was moved to our budget area from state government finance. And the other 75% of our budget, $2.3 billion, are aids and credits paid to local governments. And as you can see off on that bar chart to the right, cities receive the largest share of the payments at $1.2 billion, and this is about 55% of the total payments that go to local governments, and the major aid in that is LGA. Counties receive about 35% of the aid at $804 million, and county program aid is the major aid in that category. And then for towns, special districts, and school districts, the main program and payment to those three are the market value credit programs. So if you move to the next slide, I just wanted to show this next slide. This is local non-school revenues by source. And the reason I put this in here is just to show two things. One is to show how the proportion of the property tax and the state aid as total local government revenue. So you can see property tax is the largest source of revenue at 29%. And then that state aids is 20% of the $2.3 billion. But I wanted to point out that property tax, aids, and credits only makes up about 38% of that piece, so about 8% of the total. And also, this pie would obviously look, these are all local governments together, so it would look different if we were just looking at cities or just looking at counties. And it's also important to note that of some of these revenues, not all of them are fungible. Some of them can only be used for specific purposes and are fairly restricted. So of that 29%, if you move to the next slide of property taxes, this just shows you property taxes by type of government. So this is slide 9. And a couple things I just wanted to point out on this is that counties, as you can see, is the largest share. The statewide property tax is new since taxes payable 2002, and that was about $618 million in fiscal 05, which is what this year this pie is for. And the school district levy, I just wanted to point out, is about 24%, but before the state takeover, used to be a bigger share of the pie, and it was more like 40 to 45%. So if you move to the next slide, I just wanted to go over briefly some of the aids to cities and counties. This first graph is to show the levy and general purpose aid mix for cities and counties, and as you can see that cities get a lot more aid and is a lot bigger proportion of their levy plus aid mix than counties. And this is mostly because counties receive state money through other sources like transportation and health and human services. So they don't rely as much from the property tax aid and credits area as cities do. And if you go to the next slide, it just kind of shows the county levy aid mix over time. And it's since 2001, fiscal 02, so that's the year before the reform. And then 2002, fiscal 03, is the first year of the reform. And the levy plus aid remained relatively the same after the reform, but counties received cuts, as you can see, in aid in 2003 and 2004, but received an increase in aid beginning in 2005. And the general purpose aid that's included in here is county program aid and taconite aid. And before 2004, fiscal 05, it included old law county aids, which is HACA, county criminal justice aid, family preservation aid, and attached machinery aid, and we repealed all of those aids in 04. If you go to the next slide, it just kind of shows you what's happened to county aid funding since 2003. 2003 is when we made some of the cuts to local governments. So as you can see, in 2003, counties were certified to receive $226 million, but they actually received $161 million in 2003 and about $112 million in 2004 after cuts. But I should mention that in both of these years, counties and cities were under levy limits, and in 2004, they were allowed to levy back 60% of their aid cut that they received in 04. So whatever their aid cut was in 04, they could levy back 60% of that. And in 05, there are no levy limits. And then in 2005, they receive a fairly significant increase in funding, and this is under a new county program aid formula. But I just wanted to mention that there are about 15 counties that receive less aid under the new formula in 2005, the $206 million, than they did under the 112 after cuts in 04. And seven of those counties will receive transition aid for the next 3 years.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Solberg.
Do you have a list of those counties for us?
I do, Mr. Chair. I can get that to you.
Thank you.
Continue then, please.
If you move to the next slide, this is just to show the same thing for cities, city levy plus aid since 2001. And as you can see, it went down from 01 to 02. So 02 was the first year of the reform, and that was mainly due to the elimination of City HACA was a little bit bigger than the increase that they received in LGA, so that's why that went down slightly. And then they also received cuts in 2003 and 2004, so those amounts went down a little bit. And the general aid amount will remain fairly constant now beginning in 2004 because the LGA appropriation amount is set in statute. And that's mostly what's included in the aid category is LGA plus taconite aid. And before 2004, it also included low-income housing aid and City HACA, which were both repealed. So if you move to the next slide, this just kind of shows city LGA over time. And the main reason I put this in is just to show that in 2003 we made changes to LGA, and one of them was the elimination of most of the grandfathered aid or the base aid beginning in 2004. And there's only about $27 million in base aid left, and most of that is aid going to regional centers, which was done in 2001. And now most of the LGA is distributed through the formula, and that's that $410 million. And I should mention that there was a new formula beginning in 04 for cities over 2,500, but cities under 2,500 are still on the old formula. So moving to the next slide, what I wanted to do is just to give an idea over the last few sessions some of the major changes that we've made to the property tax aids and credits budget since 2001. And what I wanted to do here is just show the changes that we made that specifically affected the property tax aids and credits budget. But so beginning in 2001, counties, the major thing was the state takeover of the courts. Cities, it was the elimination of HACA and an increase in LGA. And then for all jurisdictions, it was the elimination of all other non-county HACA and the new market value homestead and agricultural credits that replace the old education homestead and ag credit. And some of the things we also did, as I'm sure you know, was the state takeover of K-12 funding and the state takeover of transit funding. And those were things that were in our bill but did not specifically affect the aids and credits budget. So all of the changes that were made to K-12, the appropriations for K-12 were done in the K-12 budget, so they weren't reflected in the numbers that I showed you earlier for the property tax aids and credits expenditures. Another thing we did in 2001, moving to the next slide, was we made changes to the homeowner property tax refund that I mentioned earlier. We increased the income eligibility from 74 to 80,000, and I just put in here what it is now for property taxes payable 2005. So people filing this year, it's up to 85, and we also increased the maximum refund from 500 to 1500, and for property taxes payable, that's up to 1590. And we also decreased the income threshold for co-pays on the homeowner schedule. And I just wanted to mention that both the income brackets and the maximum refunds are indexed for inflation, so those will continue to go up. And we did not make any changes to the renter's refund, but I did put in there just so you could compare the current income eligibility and the maximum refund for the renter's property tax refund. In 2002, moving to the next slide, we didn't make very many changes in 2002. Most of the major changes that we made were corrections for some unintended consequences of the 2001 reform. So the pipeline aid was only for three counties, Kitson, Clearwater, and Red Lake, I want to say, if memory serves. And that was mostly due to the reduced class rates for public utility. And they had a fairly significant amount of their tax base in the public utility, so this was an aid for them that was rolled into HACA. Same kind of thing with the disparity reduction aid. Compression of the class rates decreased the amount they get, so this kind of boosted that up a little bit. And then we increased the aid credit also, and that was to target the lower value farms who had an increase in their class rate.
Sure.
Representative Solberg?
Just back one thing, in the renter's refund, he said the current income eligibility is $46,000. Is that adjusted at all for size of family?
Ms. Zimmerman?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, I believe you get a subtraction for dependents, but I'm not the expert on the income piece of that, so that's my understanding of it, but I can get you exactly what the income is that they use.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, continue on then, Ms. Zimmerman.
Okay, so moving to the next slide, slide 18. These are the changes that we made in 2003. So for counties, we reduced county aids by $190 million in 04 and 05. And there's a new county program aid, as I mentioned before, in 06, and they received a $95 million increase in aid from 05 to 06. For cities, we reduced LGA by $293 million in 04 and 05. And we also made temporary reductions to the market value, the homestead market value credit reimbursement, and that was about $39 million in 04 and 05. And as I mentioned before, there was a new LGA formula in 05 for cities over 2,500, and we eliminated most of the grandfathered aid. Other changes that we made in 2003, if you move to the next slide, we also made some reductions to townships and special districts. They received temporary reductions in their market value credits for 04 and 05. And you can see those numbers are 7.5 and 6.5 million respectively, and that was part of the governor's plan to have all jurisdictions receive some sort of cut. And then the last two slides that I wanted to go over, I just wanted to go over what the governor's recommendations are for the aids and credits budget. There's not very many, but I went out, I have the top three listed here, and there's one or two other minor provisions, but these three are the major ones. The first one is reducing the percent of rent constituting property taxes for the renter's property tax refund from 19 to 16% in fiscal 2007 and to 15% in fiscal 2008 and after, and that is a savings about 30.4 million in FY07, and then the number gets slightly bigger in fiscal 08. The savings is about 40 million, and in fiscal 09 it's about 40 million as well. And then the other one of the other major recommendations is extending the temporary reductions to the homestead market value credit to cities for fiscal 2006 and 2007 only. So that would mean it would go back to full funding in fiscal 08. Right now, under current law, it's scheduled to go back to full funding in fiscal 06. So the governor is recommending it, extending it for those 2 years, and that's a savings of $35.3 million. And the other major recommendation for our budget area is eliminating the political contribution refund program, and that's about $10.5 million for the biennium. And the last slide just kind of shows you the base budget and then what the governor recommends. And so the total net reduction to our base budget under the governor's recs is $73 million, which is about 2.5% reduction from the base. So that's the end of my presentation, and if anybody has any questions.
Representative Clark.
Ms. Chair, I just want to go back to the renter's credit, again, the governor's recommendation. There's nothing in his recommendation that ties the changes to reduce, to be passed on to the renter, is there?
Mr. Chairman, I think I'm a little confused by the question. The mm-hmm. What the recommendation would do is people who are currently eligible for the renter's property tax refund, some people would become ineligible,
right,
and some people it would lower the refund to renters.
Representative Clark, a
right.
follow-up.
Well, Mr. Chair, just insofar as there may be some savings to the property owners in some instances, isn't that correct?
Ms. Zimmerman?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, this savings is only from the refunds to the renters. It is no connection to the landlords or the property owners.
Representative right. Clark.
Right, Mr. Chairman, maybe I'm not asking the question right. I guess...
Mr. Chair.
Let me think about how to ask you in a different way, but I'm just knowing that as we have had changes to the property, rental property, any of the savings that were created in recent years, any of the shifts, none of that was required to be passed on to the renters. And so now, in this recommendation, as we cut the renter's credit, we continue that disparity. That's, I guess that's my question. There's no mending of that.
Mr. Zimmerman. Representative Clark, yes, that's correct. We have been compressing the class rate of apartment property, and I believe that ended in, I want to say, 04. I think we did it over 2 or 3 years, but I'm not remembering, and you're right, none of that was required to be passed on in the form of rent. So, and no, there's nothing in his recommendation that specifically addresses that, no.
Representative Solberg.
Nope.
Are there any other questions? I'd just like to make an announcement. The next meeting will be April 4th. April 4th. We stand adjourned.